Welcome to Discipleship Conversations, a Mission Alive podcast with Jeremy Hoover and Stephen Carazell.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing great, Stephen, and I'm glad that we're able to get together on this this call here just about a week before Christmas.
Yeah, we had already kind of arranged to have this conversation and record it for an episode. And, just even last night, I pinged my brother-in-law and see if he'd be willing to join in with us because the conversation really fits with what he's doing too. And so, almost 3 years ago, I invited him to do a discipleship cohort with me because he was starting to lead a men's ministry at his church as a lay leader, longtime church attender. He's led several different aspects of ministry, but never in a paid position or anything like that. And so, he's gotten involved with DCs and has participated and then now is facilitating and is in a second group. And the thing we wanted to talk about today was just what we personally learned from being in a DC and from leading a DC. And so that was something that we wanted to do. So Chris Wigginton is our guest today and just want to talk, I guess in some ways include someone who isn't in paid ministry, which is kind of different from a lot of the guests that we've had. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm glad you invited him. I think he added a lot to the conversation. I think it's really different when my experience, and I think most of yours in discipleship cohorts is working with other church leaders who are on staff at different churches and being able to hear Chris talk about his perspective as just a regular church member who went through the process and is now helping to lead and facilitate it in his church. He had a lot of insight, and I would even say he shared a lot of wisdom today on how to go about doing that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that it really stands out to me about discipleship cohorts is that this is a long game kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's, they're 4 months long, but it's not about what happens in those 4 months. It's about what keeps happening. And I think even the story he shares at the end is something, the fruit of something that started 3 years ago. Or even more for him. So Let's get to that conversation. Hello, welcome to another conversation on Discipleship Conversations. I'm Stephen Carazell, and I'm with Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing great.
Good. We also have with us my brother-in-law, Chris Wigginton. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
So today, one of the things that we want to talk about, or the thing we really want to talk about, is our experience in discipleship cohorts. So we kind of want to share things that we've talked about or things that we've learned through the cohorts as participants, and also things that we've learned as we've moved into a facilitator role and then what we've seen it do in the lives of other people. And so for you who have been listening to us, to Jeremy and I on this podcast for a while, you've heard us talk about it in different ways with different people. And for this conversation, we've invited Chris into it because he has participated in it and has recently been leading cohorts at his church ministry. One of the things that makes Chris a bit different is that he is not a Well, we won't go to all the things that makes Chris different being my brother-in-law, but the thing that makes him different that other people we've talked about this with is that he's not a minister per se on staff at a church. He is a member at Round Rock Church of Christ for, I don't know, decades, Chris.
Years. I think it's right around 30, maybe a little over. Mm-hmm.
That's a long time to be there. Mm-hmm. You filled different roles and seen different things. And I think that currently, if my memory serves me right, you are a deacon of men's ministry. Is that, mm-hmm. I think that that's been, when did that happen? 2020 or 2019?
It was, yeah, I think 2020. Okay. They had, they announced to the church during the pandemic. And so we were all on a big Zoom call there. But I'm one of three guys that are involved with the men's ministry.
And I think that prompted our conversation about things to do, ways to interact with men in ministry.
It did. 'Cause I didn't know exactly what I, was, being asked to do or, being called to do or what I could do, to help men, you know, in their walk. And so, yeah, I think that really was me trying to figure out what, as a deacon, as a servant in that particular role, what can I do to help? And I think that, that led to, the discipleship cohorts.
So we were in 2020, I guess we were still fairly new with that, and particularly in this, the new format of the DCs. And so I suggested that, you know, you go through a DC with me as a leader. And so that's kind of where I guess I want to start. And Jeremy and I will kind of chime in with some of the things that we learned, although our first participation was in a with different material, a little different structure, but still some things that we learned. So just your participation as a DC participant, maybe start with what you expected and what then move into what you, how that was the same as what you experienced or how that was different than what you experienced.
Okay. First, I didn't just take your word for it. I asked some other people that I knew that had gone through a DC. Not 100% relying on your recommendation, but I was a little nervous about it. I associate the word discipline and self-discipline with discipleship, you know, efforts, and that is not necessarily a strong suit of mine, and so I was nervous about that going in, and I did not find that to be the case. So my first you know, shallow expectation was I was going to have to work hard at something, and it would be hard for me to do. And it was not. It was a new. I learned a lot of new things, and so that was a lot different than, you know, knuckling down and, by golly, I'm going to do this. I've got to do these things. So that was an expectation happily unmet.
Yeah. So, I think that just kind of going to my first experience in DC's, I was uncertain as well. You know, I went in just based on someone's invitation, kind of trusting somebody in that. It's kind of hard to know exactly what you're getting into when someone asks you to do that. And I kind of trusted Todd Vogt, who invited me in due to his friendship and some of the things that we were talking about. And so, there was things even in that structure that I was thinking was going to happen, and then really kind of surprised. But I would say from my experience, Jeremy, and I don't know if this was yours, it was kind of I describe it even when I lead one kind of as a slow burn. It's something that even through the very beginning of it, it's kind of, okay, I'm a participate and see what happens. And it was something that happened somewhere down in the middle toward the end for me. That's like, this is a good thing. That's worth more than just me participating in it, but doing something with it. So did you have that kind of experience, Jeremy?
Yeah, I kind of did. I was telling you before Chris joined the call that I'm pretty old school when it comes to DCs. I was in one of the earliest iterations of it with Galen Van Reenen. I actually thought it was going to be a book discussion when I came in, because back then we were using a book and kind of structuring our conversations via the book. I had encountered Galen on a ministry group on Facebook of all places, and he invited me to join him in this group. And so I went in thinking that we were just going to be talking about a book, but what was helpful was the intentional spiritual formation component that came out of that. Like, I was used to trying to make sure that I structured and adhered to the traditional quiet time where I read my Bible and then prayed through a list. And in the cohort, I was being introduced to all sorts of different things. I think they were called life shapes at the time, and trying to reflect theologically and spiritually on different components of my life and ministry based on what we were doing in the book. And the fact that we were doing it with a group of seven or eight of us, and every week we were coming back and sharing our successes, our challenges, the difficulties that we encountered with trying to pray differently, with trying to read the Bible for formation rather than information. And then later, when we got into this idea of finding a third place to go to try to listen for what God was doing, all of it clicked for me at that point. And I saw a path forward for how to integrate spiritual formation with how I live my life. I gained a broader understanding of what being missional was about. And so that for me was really helpful. I don't know. I was thinking about this, trying to review in my mind as you were talking with Chris. I don't think I ever went through the newest format as a participant. I think by then I was just leading groups. But what I found really helpful about that, well, I think we'll come to that. Well, let me save that thought for a little later.
Yeah, because I think I'm in the same boat with that as well. And so even leading was also my first time as participating. So Chris, I'm gonna ask you this. What were some things that you picked up that were new to you, that you saw something kind of changing in the way you related to God or related to the spiritual life through being a participant in the DC?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the the approaches to Scripture were new to me. The Lectio Divino and the dwelling in the Word, those were all new to me, as well as the different types of approaches to prayer. And so maybe that's just because I'm a lay person and I didn't have all the Bible schooling that you guys had, but so a lot of that was new to me, and so that was kind of refreshing. And one of the things that Jeremy said was, I've taught a lot of classes through my time at church. I've led small groups. I've led life groups for teenagers. I've done a lot of that kind of thing, and so I had developed the habit of reading, not so much for my relationship with God, but for how can I best teach this to other people? And so it showed me a way and introduced me to the more personal side of my relationship with God, in that now, having gone through a couple as participant, and now I'm leading my second one now, I can approach God's word and God himself with the expectation that he is going to speak to me, that he has something for me, and not just something that I'm going to transmit to other people. And so that's changed a lot in my life. I would say that's the biggest thing. And it was refreshing to have these new avenues to do that.
I would say, Chris, that what you just related is probably not too uncommon experience for ministers whose job it is to do those things. And
right.
Therefore, you're going to study so that you know, and that it's even hard. I think sometimes when I encounter something, when I even go to learn at a conference or watch something or whatever, I hear something and I'm immediately thinking, how do I turn this into a series, or how do I fit this into my next, the lesson that we're doing right now? Or, you know, I make it functional for transmission rather than for soaking it in. And I think the DC's for me has, and while I've known about Lectio Divina and have practiced it and practiced different kind of creative ways of praying, this has my participation in this has kind of rooted it as a habit rather than just as an activity. So that's, for one reason, that's important to me to keep doing them, because they're doing something to me. And so I think that the thing that I was kind of reflecting on, what was it that I learned? And I think that the reinforcing and the growing of this pray always kind of life, you know, we read that in from Paul in 1 Thessalonians, and pray unceasingly, or however, whatever the translation says, it's a pray always. And it's given me a very practical way of doing that, of living a life of prayer, rather than, Jeremy, as you described, the quiet time, I'm going to read my Bible and now I'm going to pray through a list. And that's my time of prayer. Now prayer is like through my life, through the whole day.
Well, you know, I think I always had a sense that quiet time, it was good, but it was kind of limited at the same time. Like I was always aware that I might start my morning with, on a really good day, an hour of Bible reading, reflection, and prayer. But then I would go on and I'd spend half an hour reading a ministry book. Later in the day, I'd spend an hour and a half watching TV. I'd waste half an hour on Facebook, on the computer. And I started to think, so if I'm looking at my day and I'm chopping it up, I had, you know, 1 hour that I dedicated to God. And then I had all these other things. And I'm not trying to downplay the quiet time for anybody who's finding value in that as a habit, but I'm trying to contrast it with what I learned in the cohort was this way of listening to God through the ongoing moments of life. And so my scripture reading was an act of listening to God. The way that I prayed, I've really taken to the listening list idea. And that brought more of a listening focus. When I go to a coffee shop, you know, I used to go to coffee shops and think that I'm here as a witness for the Lord, because I had my Bible open and I was working on a sermon. I had a stack of books sitting there, but I sat off in a corner. I really didn't want to be interrupted. But I wanted to be there if somebody felt like they wanted to come to me for conversation. But now when I go to coffee shops, a lot of times I won't even take anything with me. I just purposely go just to be there for half an hour, 45 minutes. I can pray during that time, but I'm trying to listen according to the habits that we've learned about listening for. What might God be up to in this coffee shop? How can I be present here in a way that might bring some spiritual value? And so that listening component has transformed how I think about my life and how I think about my relationship with God. It's not just that 30 to 60 minutes of quiet time. It's an ever-present reality, might be a better way of saying it. Yeah. And I'm aware of that now.
Yeah. So I think I've learned, I need to learn to like coffee One of the things that has made it, and it's kind of along those same lines, Jeremy, that has stuck with me since the first one I went through with Stephen. Eli telling Samuel, well, okay, this is what you say when you hear this voice again. Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. And that goes through my mind, and I pray that constantly throughout the day. And it's put me in a posture, if I'm in a coffee shop, getting something other than coffee, that God will, he has the desire and the ability and the capacity to speak to me, whether I'm reading or whether I'm talking directly to him or if I'm out, you know, in a different environment. So that has changed me a lot.
And it doesn't have to be a coffee shop. I know Chris knows this. I'm saying this for our listeners because I think for some reason that's kind of what we default to, but it can be any place. I was in a restaurant, a diner yesterday morning with a friend of mine, and it occurred to me while we were there that the waitress that was helping us was just really positive. And so I just wanted to affirm her and I let her know that she was really helpful. I appreciated her positive attitude and I hope she had a great day. And I'm hoping that the diner's in my neighborhood. So I'm hoping that maybe if I get back there a couple times a month, she might be there. Maybe we can strike up a relationship. Other times I've gone to the library. I used to go task orientation. I'm going to pick up a book, so I'm in and out, or I'm going to spend an hour or two researching a lesson, so I'm on point with the task. But now when I go, I still might be doing the task, but I'm looking around and I'm noticing that there's often some of the same folks that are at the computer area every time I'm there. And I begin to pray about finding help, asking God to help me find some way of, maybe striking up a conversation. I know there's some homeless people that hang out around the library. I'm trying to think about how I could interact with them in a positive way that might bring some benefit. And some people might hear this and think, well, that's just natural. But for me, I'm really type A, and I'm task driven. So the listening has helped me slow down to think about these kinds of interactions a lot differently than how I would think about them if I hadn't had that experience of learning how to listen better.
Right. I think that one thing that this thing has helped me to do, and it sounds like it's where I hear y'all talking about, is setting aside some intentional times to listen through prayer, scripture has helped me kind of just automatically go there. And other times, you know, it's not like I reserve other times for this. It's like a passage. And so like another time I'll be reading a passage for study or for transmission, you know, for what I'm going to teach, but all of a sudden I'm linking things. And here, you know, so I think those are like, you know, here's what God's saying. If I'm hearing this here, and I'm soaking that in, is God speaking to me in all these different venues rather than just partitioning off to one area. It's like now bleeding through my life because it started with these intentional times, as habits. So Chris, as you experience the DC as a participant, at what point, or, you know, how did you decide this is a good thing to do in leading? And how has that process of becoming a facilitator of DCs helped you continue that growth, the spiritual growth, or what has it done for you just to lead, to be a facilitator of them?
Yeah, I think I decided pretty early on in our DC that this would be a good thing for other people to experience. It wasn't repugnant to me, Stephen.
That's good.
But it was, and so I, because it was making an impact on me, because it was changing me to be a better follower of Jesus, I could see that change in myself. And I thought, okay, this is something I can do. And since I'm involved with the men's ministry, this is something I can take and put in our congregation, in front of these men, and hopefully, you know, see the same things. So the question was,
the facilitating did it, you know, what did that do to you?
Right.
And then what did you see it doing with others?
Right. So it, being on the, a little bit on the other side of it, yet still participating as going through it as a participant, it, you know, there's a little shift in perspective and sort of guiding the conversation during the actual cohort time. But I think one of the main things that it did for me was encourage me to see change and growth in people's walk being challenged. So my first cohort that I led was with guys that had been Christians 30, 40 years, long, long time. And so I was curious. I didn't know how it was going to, you know, shape or change them, but to hear them talk and to begin thinking in ways kind of that we've talked about, was great. It was good for them that they were experiencing that, but it was great for me to hear that and to see that, to see God being active in their lives. That was really, really good for me personally. This second group that I have just started, we're about a month in, a little bit different set of guys. There is a level of enthusiasm that I was not expecting. They love the material and they try to limit to an hour. And that is hard to limit the discussion to an hour, because they are taking it seriously. And I think that they, are enjoying the new things that we're talking about, new approaches to scripture, new, you know, thinking creatively about, different things. So, and again, that's super encouraging to me, you know, selfishly. And that it's just really, been, good for me. I love seeing people change and grow and God working. So I've enjoyed that aspect of it.
Do you is it something, can you have a vision of it kind of picking up steam and momentum within the ministry and spreading throughout, or what do you see the potential for it in your ministry?
Right. Yeah. I'm hoping that, there will be, new, guys that want to lead on their own. And so that so it'll spread much more quickly than me being able to talk with three or four guys at a time. I've got one person I think that is interested in leading. I haven't, figured out how to sort of macro, to tie a big group of people together with it who have gone through it, or, so that's sort of my next, other than, you know, having other leaders develop, is there some way to, on a macro scale, bring these guys back together, or, you know, continue what has been started in the cohort, and not just have it end when that time ends. I don't think so. My first group, we still meet about once a month anyway, just because we've gotten to be so close and good friends. So, but that's kind of the next challenge that I think I'm going to have to come up against.
I think that's something that Steve Schaefer, who's kind of behind the leadership of the DCs, has talked about ways to continue the group beyond the set 4 months is to a monthly type of meeting. But even if you're leading, if you yourself are leading multiple groups, that's really not sustainable. You can't keep leading other groups and meeting monthly with every group that you have formed. Yeah.
Maybe I'll just meet with the groups that I like.
Yeah, you rate them. That's true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you've asked a good question. How do you link the people together? I mean, how do you link this group with this group? They've got the same, they've gone through the same material, but they haven't, they didn't go through it together. So there's some differences there. Jeremy, have you heard of anybody or seen people take those groups and link them together any kind of way?
No, I think that's probably the biggest challenge that we have. I think the groups are really good at helping to establish these habits in people that haven't had them. But then when the group's done, we have the level two option, but that's pretty much for folks that want to go on to lead. I'm starting to think that maybe the duration is a little too short. That there's got to be some way of, like, in my experience, people are just getting the habits by the fourth month. They're finding the consistency. They're seeing how they mesh together, and then we're done. And I don't think we have a really good way of linking them together beyond that. I don't know what that would look like, but I think it's definitely worth considering. I like what Chris just said about the monthly meeting. I don't think it's entirely unsustainable, but what it might mean is that the monthly gathering becomes, a little larger scale.
Yeah.
It might be that there's, over time, you have three or four groups that participate in the monthly get together.
One of the things I've thought about is, there's like, I'm in my second group within my church ministry. And within my first group, I have one of the guys that is becoming a leader and is already starting to think through a group that he wants to lead. But I don't anticipate everybody I lead through a group to lead another group. And so it might be interesting to take somebody from this group and take somebody from this group and somebody from another group and link them together and just run another group. Just say, hey, y'all, you did this once. Would you like to do it again? And just, help establish those habits and even more. We could do this together. Because one of the things that I don't know that we talk about it with DC stuff, but I see the potential within a ministry is, Chris, you've talked about this group became really close. This other group's become really close. And one of the problems with ongoing small groups in churches is that sometimes they can become a little cliquish. And how can we use this as a way of connecting, intertwining community across? In some ways, I kind of talk about it as deepening community. You're not just connected to this small group. You actually know somebody over here too. You're beyond your group. I don't know. That's something that's in my mind. I haven't done enough groups to kind of put that together. But I don't know. Perhaps you could probably envision that as well.
Yeah, and I don't want the last thing I want is for me to be the only connection between all of these people. I don't want that at all. So developing other leaders is important, I think.
You brought out a good point there. Within a ministry, you can create an unhealthy environment by being the central link, and that's not good. Mm-hmm.
Steven, I would add to that probably the way you and I tend to approach the DCs is a little different than how Chris is. I think when you and I lead a DC, at least when we do it on behalf of Mission Alive, we're pretty much working with leaders. And we know that we've got 4 months with these guys. They're often from different places around the country. And we don't even meet in person. We meet online. And then we're done after 4 months, unless they come to level two, and then we're together for another 4 months. But the leaders that we're equipping and training go back to contexts like what Chris is in, where I don't think there's any harm in thinking about the long form, the long track DC that Steve has talked about, where you adapt a small group to more of a DC framework, and you say, you know, we're going to meet together for a year or 2 years, however long we meet together. This is going to be the format that we follow. And we're hoping to move into outreach or move into mission through this while we're developing habits of listening. But this is going to be basically our small group curriculum. And I think you can do it both ways. And maybe there's some fruit in there about how groups can be linked together afterwards.
I think that's good. To long form, also the idea that it's not a one and done. You can do this multiple times with different people, and it can have it doesn't repeat the effect. It kind of just expands the effect. So one last thing, Jeremy, you've touched on it. The idea of the DCs and mission putting you out there. And I have to say, that is one thing that I have continued to struggle with, is finding finding a mission place, a space, you know. And it's hard for me in the way I operate. Maybe I really need to change the way I operate, but I feel like, you know, I'm not making myself busy. I feel good with the rhythm of my life right now. And one of the things I've done with just the idea of mission space is really to try to pay attention to the events of every day. And it's still not happening the way I'd like for it to happen, but just how has that challenged you or brought you out into an idea of mission for each of you? Jeremy, you talked about restaurants and libraries. Chris, have you seen any kind of change in the way you think about that?
And I mentioned this in our, when I was in the DC with you, that so I have a second job where I deliver pizza for Domino's just a couple nights a week. And so I decided, I saw that as an environment to look for God. I was going to use that as what's called our mission space. Just as an aside, the group that I led, the first group I led, we changed the mission space name to Dojo, because that's where one of our guys would go and he would be trained and he'd watch and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, so we called the mission space our Dojo. So Domino's became my Dojo, and it changed. I don't really want a second job. Who wants to, you know, do that? But it changed my attitude going into that job. And when I go in that door, what I'm listening to, or how I'm listening to what people are saying, how what I say to people, you know, I'm more realizing that you know, God is saying things to me through these people and my interactions with them. And I need to be his agent there, instead of I'm just going to do this for 4 hours. I'm out of here. I don't care. And there's been a couple of different people that I've kind of zoned in on in particular. And I got to share this. It happened just last night. Young kid, this is his full-time job is delivering pizza. And I've shared a little bit. We've talked a little bit. He knows that, you know, I go to church, and we talked about different, you know, musicians, Christian musicians that he'd heard of. anyway, he told me last, he said, Mr. Wigginton, it's funny he called me that. He said, you're a Christian man, right? And I said, yeah. He said, well, I got to tell you. And he shared that. And I've been praying for this guy, praying about, you know, my interaction with him. And he said, I got to tell you, 2 weeks ago, for religious reasons, I didn't ask him what that meant. He said, I quit smoking pot. And I feel so much better. He said, it's like I have energy and all this. And I just thought, maybe God used me a little bit there. That idea has, the mission, what I'm here for, what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, God's talking to me, but what am I going to do about it? Of course, is the question. And that has changed how I approach almost like Jeremy was saying, almost every place I go, that's on my mind. And I'll embarrass my wife or my kids by talking to strangers. I do that. And that is so far out of my nature to do that. But that's changed. That's been a big change for me.
Chris, that's really creative and out of the box. And I'm really thankful that you shared that. That helps me think differently even about what a mission space is. It doesn't have to be a physical location. It's more an attitude about which, or an attitude that we come to a specific thing with. I just want to share as we kind of wrap up here that I think congregationally we can think about the mission space a little differently as well. I don't think it has to be each individual person finding a way to go do something. I think groups that are going to be committed to at least a level one, if not an ongoing long track, can kind of adopt the space together as a group. You know, a group can say, let's meet at the same restaurant or coffee shop or library every week that we do this. And part of our mission space practice will be paying attention to what's happening and debriefing it while we're there, while we're not there. And I think there can be a lot of fruit in that as well. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway for the DCs is the community aspect. And it's not even accountability at that point. It's just banding together to listen to God and to share what we're hearing and then to act upon that. And for me, that's essentially what discipleship is.
You use the word congregationally. My first DC group that I led, those guys were all small group leaders. And so they took, one of them in particular, took the things that we were doing and practicing to his small group. And so I think they kind of saw their small group, you know, that is one of their mission spaces is within the congregation. And that was kind of cool as well. But I agree about the community aspect that you mentioned, Jerry. Absolutely. Jeremy.
Yeah, no problem. I get called any number of things, and I just go with it.
Well, Chris, your name's right there, Jeremy, and I said Jerry.
It's not a problem. Chris, thank you for being with us today. And Stephen, it's as always, it's a great conversation with you, but I think touching on the DCs today has been good. It's been affirming. It's been helpful. And I suspect that each of the three of us has been inspired to think even more deeply about our own spiritual habits and how we can lead our DCs better, but more importantly, help to shepherd and lead the people who are in the DCs. So thank you all for being on this call. A Merry Christmas to the both of you. And we'll be back soon.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this discipleship conversation. We invite you to share this episode and tune in next time for another conversation. We also invite you to subscribe and rate the podcast through your favorite podcast app. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments and questions to media@missionalive.org. Check out the episode show notes and learn more about the podcast and other Mission Alive media resources at missionalive.org/media. Intro and outro music is by audionautics.com. Mission Alive works to bring about the holistic transformation of marginalized communities through starting and renewing innovative churches that address the most challenging issues faced by their neighbors. Learn more about what we do and how to connect at missionalive.org.